KUJZ is 95.3 The Score.
I hope you're ready. It's that time.
This is going to be cool.
Climb aboard for the radio ride known as Sports Talk.
A day that will live in sports radio infamy.
Brought to you by Guarantee RV.
We're talking the big deal, the real deal.
On Highway 99 in Junction City. Online at GuaranteeRV.com.
I am not only drinking the Kool-Aid, I'm the manufacturer.
I am losing my mind.
Tannen, it might be semi-circle time.
Hi, I'm Steve, and, well, I brought a list.
Ben Neff, a guy with tons and tons of issues.
Yeah, I kind of do have issues.
And broadcasting them, searching for answers.
Yeah, to go, what the hell are we doing?
It's Steve Tannen.
Yo, welcome to Sports Talk. It's Thursday. We got action in town tonight. A big one. Though, from an Oregon point of view, clearly the better team on paper. With no Chris Duarte and an iffy Will Richardson, that's kind of a big equalizer, especially for a Cal team that's playing better right now than they have in years, not just this season. I mean, remember, they're 7-9 in conference. They were picked last, dead last, not even, 12th and a half out of 12 by the media. And they'd only won 2 and 3 games, 5 total in league the previous two seasons. They came to hell, Caesar! The previous two seasons under Wyking Jones, enter Mark Fox, who'd done some decent work at Nevada, and then Georgia in the SEC, and already up to 7 V-I-C-T-O-R-Y, victory, victory, that's our cry. And of course, we're all counting down to tournament time. Who will be seated where? TBD. As for the women's side of things, it started from Vegas today on the Pac-12 network with Cal becoming just the second ever 12 seed to put a W on the board. And that was quite a scene. I love the passion. I love the joy. So they are, we had Ashley Adamson of the Pac-12 network on Monday. She's there. She's joined by Roz Gold and Woodé, who is a Stanford superstar and actually from my neck of the woods, went to a Bishop Malloy High in Queens. And we had her on the show once, many years ago, when she first went to work for the Pac-12 Network. And it seemed like 45 minutes later, she got hired as the sideline reporter for the Warriors. And now she's just like this national super-duper star. And she's really great. And who else is with them there? I think Elise Woodward. So they're interviewing Charmin Smith, the coach of Cal, who had just pulled off this monumental win. And the team is behind her. Behind all of them there at the podium, and they are just dancing and celebrating, and it's like, yeah, that's the joy of the game. That was pretty cool. Right now, and by the way, it kind of ties into Oregon a bit because now Cal advances to face number 4 Arizona. The winner of that game will play the winner of Oregon versus the winner of the game being played now, Utah-Washington, the traditional 8-9, who would square off against the 1. And that's a tight game right now. You got the Utes, who are one of the best three-point shooting teams in the league, taking on Amber Melgoza and the Huskies. And Utah has just made another bucket inside. So just inside 8 minutes ago, they are up 5. So I'm watching the first game. I got the sound down. I've got sound on. You know, I'm listening to the Rome Show and then Tiki and Tierney, and I'm trying to actually get things done to do a radio show. And I'm so confused because time is ticking down. There's like a minute to go. Why aren't they fouling? Why is there no sense of immediacy? And then there's a foul shot, and then a miss, and then a steal, and then a shot. And this one kid from Cal, it's a shot from the corner, and all of a sudden, it's a one-point game. And I'm like, well, you guys are taking this awfully well. Oh, that was the end of the third quarter. And it's a lot to drink in. A, I'm
just a bit outside.
And all of you can attest that I get a little distracted by other things. And so I like to take notes, so if the subject comes up, I could speak intelligently about it. And all of a sudden, I had my pen, and I'm like, basically, I'm looking at Arizona State with the way they reacted to what I thought was a one-point loss. I'm like, well, if you guys don't care, then I don't care. And then I realize they go, oh, that whole 3Q thing, it's not really the end of the game. But I'll tell you what, it was a hell of an end to the third quarter, man. It was exciting. The Cal Bears were down 15, but more so they were down 11 with only a few minutes to go, and they ended up taking a double-digit lead. So they reversed the charges by about 22 points and then hung on and win. It was pretty exciting. So how things work out for tonight, we'll just do our regularly scheduled programming, and then we'll go into Duck Insider from 6 to 7 when we're done. Then I'll be back here in studio with the Jerry's Home Improvement Center pregame show talking Ducks, Cal, and Pac-12. And then at 7:30, Nick and I will leave and go over to the arena. And I'm kind of curious. It's a huge game. Everybody knows what Pritch has meant. Attendance-wise, do you folks out there get any sense at all that people are a little leery of going to a public event like this? Because each day brings in, like I said, I'm not talking about being melodramatic or any kind of a panic, but that has the facts have nothing to do with how people react sometime. You know, there's always an element of hysterics and always somebody who's going to be overly precautionary. But I'm going to be very curious to see what the attendance number is tonight. And it also falls into that category of you hear people complain, well, outside of the locals, if there are Portland fans or Bend fans or fans from Roseburg, who's going to want to come to an 8 o'clock game and not get home until midnight? Okay. Then you always hear for the 6 o'clock game, you know, is there enough time to get off work? Blah, blah, blah. Is 7 o'clock the perfect time? So tonight's attendance numbers will have my attention, to say the least. And we are saying the least. 284-8571. The Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. So talk about wondering why. We talked early in the week. There was the dust up between the Knicks and Spike Lee and James Dolan. So he said he's not going to be going. Check this out. Last night at the Garden, New York loses to Utah. It was the smallest home crowd in almost 14 years. And it's not like, well, 5 years ago, they were good. I mean, there's just an element of New York Knicks fans who live and work in the city or, you know, live in Westchester, live in Jersey and work in the city and, you know, corporate tickets. And it's still an event. I mean, if you've ever lived in a major city and then gone from work, you know, you can do it in Boston on the T lines, obviously BART for San Francisco. I don't know much about the L.A. public transportation system. It's the L in Chicago, SEPTA, Southeast Pennsylvania Transit Authority in Philadelphia, where I always like that. It just, I don't know, it always seemed to me when I worked in Philly, somebody would be like, got tickets tonight. You want to go see the Sixers? You want to go see the Flyers? Yeah, yeah, yeah. And to not have to drive, it always had kind of that big city feel to it that I liked. And that's, well, it can't be with the product on court. Although, one of the things, when you are a season ticket holder to a major franchise or program, there's certainly the element of the opposition. I mean, you know, is LeBron coming to town or the Celtics coming to town? The Lakers coming to town. Right now, I'd like to see this Dallas team. And when we were no longer single season ticket holders, my dad had two friends in later years. After the glory years of the Knicks, there were three of us. And so we'd get our season tickets and we would sit down and look at the schedule and grade them all out. Okay, Celtics, Lakers, and Bucks were all A games. And down, and then you'd go, basically, like we were having a fantasy draft in the 70s before it existed. All right, you go first. We want the Celtics 2 days before Christmas. My family's from Detroit. We're going to take the Pistons game and just go on and on. And, you know, you get 41 home games and you whack it up to about 14 each. So, if you know, with football, it's a little bit different because you don't see every team. But with basketball, I would imagine up until the invention of the Pac-12, you know, UCLA, Arizona, Oregon State were the big games. But yeah, 3,200 below capacity for Madison Square Garden has been unheard of, and you wonder. Were there some fans who were like, you know what, screw this guy once and for all because of what happened? Or are people starting to get nervous about attending public sporting events? I don't think you could be dismissive of either.
No, but I think if Knicks fans that actually care about the team want to see something done, and you're dealing with a guy like Dolan who only cares about the money that's coming in, because if he cared about the on-court product, the Knicks would not be like this, what they've turned into. So the only thing he cares about is, wow, 19,000 people are showing up to watch a horrible basketball product. It doesn't matter who their wife are, they're watching the other team or not, 19,000 people are paying to come into my building to watch my bad team. I think it's okay for me. It's doing really well. So if it starts with 3,000 people deciding, you know what, I'm not going to buy tickets.
This is a movement that began.
It's the smart thing to do. Because if James Dolan starts losing money or realizing he's not making as much money because people are actually starting to realize that it's not
worth
showing up.
We're not supporting this.
Right. Like, who cares that it's the Mecca, it's the Garden, it's basketball, it's the
basketball-ish.
It's the heartbeat of the game. That was 30 years ago. Like, no, get over it. Like, that's not what you are now. It's not worth going there to watch bad Knicks teams play all of the time. To play in a history museum or something? That's not fun.
Especially, nothing personal, but I could attest to the fact, as a New Yorker, the Jazz aren't really an attractive draw. I mean, Donovan Mitchell is only going to draw so much from the New York City crowd. And it reminds me of a circumstance that Nick brought up, and when I was working at the other radio station, we had a real direct connection to Joe Radio up in Albany Corvallis, and the J. John era was winding down. Remind me to get to that because it actually ties in. 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. Let's bring in Nate. Nate, good afternoon. How's it going?
Good. Hey, you're talking about bad teams. Talking about sick. And I, being a Clippers fan, I had this interesting thought today. You've expressed your complete sort of ambiguity towards the Clippers because they've never been anything. And Dan Patrick Day was talking about if the Titans were to go get Brady, and if it was just to win one Super Bowl, that's what you should go do. Go get Brady, get one Super Bowl. If he's done, you got your Super Bowl. That's all that matters. You got one, move on. If the Clippers were to get a title, and then, you know, a year later, 2 years later, Kawhi, Paul George move on to different teams, would you call that a success?
Absolutely. To win a championship, a first ever? No. There's the value there, I don't even think you could put a number on. And you've seen it. I mean, look how long Mike Shanahan was able to hang on as the Denver coach. He won those two. They weren't contenders anymore, but he was able to live off that. I mean, I think that's pretty common, and I think most fans would be like, all right, all in, every egg in that basket, but you get the Super Bowl championship, but you get the NBA championship. I don't know of a fan who would say no.
I agree 100%. The only part that I have in the back of my mind is that I love to have pride in my team for more than just 1 year. So it's been kind of tough to be a Clippers fan and have pride in my team. But I really just want to always hang on to that.
Well, also, remember, the Clippers are very distinct, and I don't want to be mean, but they've never had a reason for you to be like, well, pump my chest out, I'm a Clippers fan. They've never won a second series ever in a postseason year.
Right, right. And I'm hoping for this success in the next year or two, but I was thinking about that, taking Brady, and is it worth that to, you know, in 3 years, you're going to struggle because you took Brady, and now you have to get a new quarterback, and so you got to put all your eggs in that basket kind of deal. Like, we lose Kawhi, we lose Paul George, now what do we do? So,
but is that accurate? Do they both have opt-outs after this year?
So, yeah, so it's a two-year deal with an option to opt out on that third year.
Oh, okay. But, yeah, I see now Kawhi is a lock for this year and next year, but the year after, that's a player option. I see. All right, I got that. Still, 2 years. Yeah. Who knows?
Right, right. Well, crossing the fingers and hoping to have that free dinner from you.
All right. I'll be happy to buy for you. And it was your wife that you convinced to be a Clippers fan?
She jumped right on with me, man. She's her own person.
All right. No, she's in on the deal, too.
Great. Great. Right. We'll look forward to it.
All right. Take it easy, Nate. All right. 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. Yeah, they were down after one of our Frost Brewed Fridays, I think at Quackers. And I basically insinuated that she was basically an NBA fan kidnapped. And she's like, no, I'm in voluntarily. I don't have to blink twice. 284-8571.
It's not Stockholm Syndrome at all.
No, not at all. Well, with the Clippers, my Lord. So back around 2006, 7, 8, the Beavs, who had shown some promise, Jay John had been a longtime assistant to Lute Olson at Arizona. And so they tapped into him because in the early 2000s, the Richie McKay course had run its course. And they were bad. They won 10 games. They won 12 games. And so then in 2005, Jay John and the Beavs won 17 games. And it looked like they were going in the right direction. It didn't. And by, I want to say, midway through the Pac-12 season in 2007, we had a couple of conversations about attendance. And there were Duck fans calling out Beaver fans for not supporting their team. And I got two calls. One was kind of anonymous. He's like, I work at the ticket office, and I could attest to the fact that people are not coming deliberately. They want a change. They are not supporting the team. They are deliberately showing up disguised as empty seats as a personal protest. And I had somebody call and said, absolutely. I've been a season ticket holder normally over the course of the year. I have not spent an extra dime on tickets this year. We are absolutely protesting this program and the direction it's going in. So, and that's always the big deal. Remember during the Jailblazer era, Paul Allen did nothing. He didn't comment, and because it takes a fan base like that a year, 2 years to be like, oh, you're basically whizzing in our face and taking us for granted that we'll be there regardless of the embarrassment of garbage you put on the court, who are actually even worse off the court. And if you notice, the timing was bad year, attendance bad. Oh, my God, we're going to do everything. Paul Allen got out in front of it. There were statements. There are releases. This is unacceptable. You know, our word to the fans is that we're going to be better. The moment it hit the wallet. So what you said, Dolan, well, First of all, when you think about Paul Allen taking a hit to the wallet, it wasn't really that severe. But for a guy like that, it's all compartmentalized. I mean, his business, whether it was owning the Seahawks, whatever else he was involved, with the NBA, there's X amount of dollars that are put in to run it, and they were starting to take a hit at the gate, and the franchise had less money to spend, you know, on employees and things like that. So the minute it started to affect the finances of the organization, then all of a sudden, after 2 or 3 years, they stepped in and decided it was unacceptable. Coincidentally.
Well, yeah, and even if it's not James Dolan's wallet exclusively being hurt, if there's other board members that are saying, hey, my paycheck looks a little bit lower, my return's coming back a little bit lower. Hey, James, what are you going to do about this? Because we can't live off of the New York Rangers maybe being good for another 2 seasons. This is kind of a big reach here. Like, if the Knicks were a lot better and we could guarantee the $19,000 instead of $16,000, $15,000, maybe it drops to $14,000 if enough people health-wise or just so sick of the Knicks being bad or just getting banned from the Garden because they're chanting to sell the team at you, you've got to do something to get out from underneath this, because it right now is probably the best chance you've got to take a proactive step to actually get better.
It's like that ridiculous circumstance with a millionaire fighting with a billionaire over the ultimate and first world problems. Will this actually be the springboard or spearhead a movement where fans are like, you know, what a good opportunity to tell Dolan to stick it right now and not spend hundreds of dollars on a crap product and, in essence, take the rest of the season off and say, don't forget, we still do have some power.
If you were 22-year-old Steve living back in Jersey going to Knick games in this situation, would you and your ragtag team of buddies also be chanting at Dolan, sell the team to try and get kicked out?
We'd be totally kicked out by now. No question about it. When the Giants were going through a really down period before a couple years before they drafted Lawrence Taylor, So they moved from Yankee Stadium. They played a couple years in New Haven at the Yale Bowl while Yankee Stadium was renovated, and then they built the Meadowlands and started there for the 1976 season. So this is about 1978, and all of a sudden, from the upper deck, this banner is unfurled, and it's like all the way down past the second deck, almost to the first deck, and it said, Wellington George Ray, how do you sleep at night? And it was Wellington Mara, George Young, the general manager, and Ray Perkins at the time, the coach. Those people were quickly escorted out, but it was the fans deciding this is unacceptable, and they still weren't very good. They snuck into the playoffs in 81, the year they drafted LT, slipped up a little bit the year of the strike, hired Parcells, he implemented his people, and by 84, they were in the playoffs, losing to the eventual Super Bowl champion Niners, 85, losing to the eventual Super Bowl champion Bears, 86, crushing everything in their path and winning the Super Bowl. So the fans spoke up. Well, that was also a thing. I know it happens in Green Bay. I'm not sure as far as season's tickets used to get willed from family to family. I don't think once MetLife opened that happened because the personal seat licenses, and it was just so expensive, enough people were like, whatevs. But there was always a very famous uncomfortable conversation that would happen, like, say, a friend, older friend, passed away, and, you know, the widow was left behind, and a guy would show up, like, at the wake or the funeral, Mary, you all right? Everything okay financially? The kids? I mean, is there anything I can help you with? No, we're good. What's Fred doing with his Giants tickets? I am not even kidding. And in big cities, there's also that conversation when somebody dies, if there's like a rent controlled apartment or something like that. Yeah. Oh, no. People become awful with stuff like that.
Greatest city on earth.
Just by the way, documented cases of, you know, I'm feeling for the widow Salamino. I mean, what she's going through. And by the way, what was Big Dan planning on doing with his Giants tickets?
All right.
All right, 284. Well, in a lot of cases, especially with about more than half of the Italian families I was really good friends with, the firstborn male was named after dad. So there was Nicky Jr. and Danny Jr. and Eddie Jr. and just on and on and on. So that's why there was Big Ed, Big Dan, Big Nicky. I'm not even almost making that up. All right, 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. And this was mostly Jersey, too, so it was even a step down. Let's take a break. We'll be back with an update and more sports talk, 95.3 The Score.
Sports Talk with Steve Tannen is brought to you by Garrity RV Supercenters. Name one of America's top five RV dealers. They don't just sell fun, they guarantee it. See over 700 options for every budget at Garrity.com.
To his left off Porzingis. Favors has him on the switch now. Down to six to shoot. Straight away, three-pointer. Good! With 1.109 remaining. 121 to 118. Doncic to his left, back to his right off Porzingis, who rolls, gets the pass to the rim for the dunk, and the triple-double for Luka.
That was one hell of a basketball game. The Mavs beat the Pellies in OT, 127-103. It even rhymes. Chuck Cooperstein on 103.3 ESPN Dallas. Zion with 21. Lonzo Ball with 25 points, 11 boards. The Godfather, Luka Doncic. His 14th triple-double of the season. 30 points, 17 rebounds, 10 dimes. How about the performance by Kristaps Porzingis? Huge game. 34 points, 12 rebounds. By the way, 5 blocks. ESPN, I forgot who it was. It might have been on The Jump. It might have been Pierce, or maybe it was Pippen as a guest, who said that they might have been playing in L.A., and he had been out at practice, and one of the coaches said, they really feel that Porzingis, like, that day, or right now, finally is 100% recovered from the ACL that basically pushed him out of New York, and watch out. They were right. That was really spot on. And and as he gets better and better and better, and the Knicks get worse and worse and worse, people are like, you gave him up, why? Because I'm a moron. Well, what it was supposed to do, you moron? All right, 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. Yeah, by the way, Nick just put on NBC Sports with Carolina at Philly. Yeah. Oh, have I been getting nauseated watching Melrose on ESPN Sports Center? I love Melrose, but I'm almost gagging having
to
say it.
Do you need to take a break? The Flyers are good,
The
Steve.
Flyers are playing really well.
It was my last lightning round question we didn't have time to get to. Flyers are on an absolute roll since, like, February 4th-ish.
Yeah, I know.
Oh, man. They're on a 7-game winning streak. They're 10-3 in their last 13. They've gone from barely hanging on to a wild card to they might flat out win the Metro.
Pushing. The Metro leaders.
We're gonna see Gritty at a Stanley Cup parade. I already announced actually a month ago.
I saw that
right about when the bandwagon started, or when the hot streak started. I jumped on the Flyers bandwagon, so I'm all in on Gritty, man. This guy's insane. He's leading the team to a place we never thought possible.
It was nauseating enough 10 years ago when they almost won the Cup. Thank God for Taves and Kane and Buffalo and those guys and the Blackhawks. That is as hard as I've rooted without a bet for a team that's not one of my favorite teams.
Without a bet.
Yeah. Because I just was like, I can't look at this. And thank God it didn't go to a seventh game. It went to a sixth game. But earlier in the playoffs. It came down to, I remember getting a call on the air. It was round two, Flyers Bruins game seven, and they're like, who are you rooting for? I'm like, I totally hold my nose and root for the Bruins in this one. ABTF, anybody but the Flyers forever.
Was that Chicago, was that the second of three that they won in like 5-6 years? Was that the middle one or was that the last one?
Because it definitely wasn't the last one.
Okay.
Because they've won within the last 10 years. I'm 99% sure of that.
Yeah, they won in the 2010 Cup Finals, the 2013 Cup Finals.
Yeah, it was the first one.
And then, oh, it was the first one?
Yeah,
really?
Because they played Philly.
Okay. That was the goal that nobody knew went in except for Patrick Kane, right? So it got, like, completely tucked in between the net and, like, that weird, like, ring at the bottom.
Oh, right, right. I totally forgot about that.
He took a shot on net, and he knew that he scored, and the official had to, like, wait for 5 seconds to find the puck before he signaled goal. And at that point, Kane had thrown his stick, his gloves, his hat up into the air, and he was at the red line racing back to the goalie. And the goalie's like, nobody signaled goal, dude. Nobody knows where the puck went. And Kane's like, I want to see it.
I know where it is. And I remember because they won it, obviously, in May of 2010. By January, Oregon, the football team, was in Glendale playing Auburn for the Natty. And one of the first national writers I ran into was Wilbon. And so he's sitting at a table. I gave it the old, do you mind if I join you? And shook hands, liked the show, blah, blah, blah. Enjoy. So you're a Chicagoite, and obviously this is before the Cubs won, which obviously, as big as the Blackhawks are, they ain't the Cubs in Chicago. And I told him to kind of rate this, and then we were talking about what would happen if the Cubs won, and he said that would have even been bigger than the Bulls, even with Jordan. But you know, you're talking about the Chicago Cubs, MLB, Wrigley Field, and, you know, the Bulls became big because of Jordan. They were always kind of third behind the Bears and the Cubs in that city. But he said, but make no mistake about it, people were losing their mind. And he obviously was wired in enough, because if you look at the team back then, there was also a sense with the age of those guys. Kane was 21 when they won their first one. Guys like Duncan Keith, I mean, they were really, really good, built to last. And, you know, actually, both of them were 21, I think. Taves and Kane are about the same age. Well, it's clear. I bet you it's not by a year. I bet you it's within months, and that they do that catch-up thing where whoever the oldest one gets caught from behind.
Patrick Kane, American, born November 19th, 1988. Jonathan Taves, the evil Canadian, April 29th, 1988.
Right, so there you go. They're about six months apart. Age. So, by the way, those two guys winning a Stanley Cup at 21, you're like, there's more to come. There were. They won three. That's a lot.
Which is crazy in that Chicago got both of them. They were born in the same year. And just because of a birthday cutoff date, they couldn't be in the same
right.
draft class.
One draft after the other. By the way, how's that for a 1-2 punch in back-to-back drafts? You know, that would be a fun thing to look at. You know, who had, like, the best back-to-back drafts?
Wow. That's
any sport.
That's quite the deep dive. But can you imagine the butterfly effect of whenever the cutoff date was in Canada and the U.S. for draft eligibility from where they these are two kids born within a cut like 6 months of each other that are in two different countries playing the same sport. And yet there's two random cutoff dates that allows them to just be on parallel timelines instead of ever intersecting. And, you know, they should have played together on similar teams, or they should have been in they would have never been teammates if one
right,
country
somebody,
had, some county had a different cutoff date, and that's where Taves lived instead of Kane or whatever it was, and all of a sudden this dynasty that was built never happens.
All right, 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. Yeah, somebody said they heard us talking with Aaron Fentress about this NFL Sunday ticket. So right now, if you don't live in the city, of your favorite team and you want to watch every game, well, you can go to a bar like I did for a couple of years, or you could subscribe to an entire season of NFL Sunday Ticket for $293. But you also have to have DirecTV. It's not like with the ML. I think with every other package, right? Whether you want to get NHL Center Ice or Full Court NBA or the MLB package, that's available on satellite and cable, right? Absolutely.
Yeah, and there's a digital option as well where you can buy in to be able to stream everything. That may have very recently become a thing as well, where I believe if you were a cord cutter or whatever, you can subscribe to just the Sunday Ticket for, you know, a much lower cost than obviously your $800 a year or so odd that you're spending to watch it for 3 months to get mad at the Giants. You're paying $800,
well,
which I'm
September,
guessing,
October, November, and December. It's 4 full months.
Okay, but by December, your rage is already over because September kind of spoiled October.
Yeah, but I've had it since like 96, so there have been some good payoffs.
A couple. Recently, though, you're paying $800 to get aggravated, making you mad, and then you're getting mad on top of that.
Right. There's been many days where I've brought out the second TV and the laptop, so there were at least two other options. Plus, I'm good with four. I do the last on one game. I keep the other game on a 32-inch screen, and I've got about a 14-inch screen for my laptop. So I could keep up pretty well with four games at once. And a lot of times I decide what the four games are, so I bet a 14 parlay.
You know, the Red Zone will show you all of the games that are happening, and you don't have to look at multiple screens or set up recordings and devices.
But
and
I pay
like
for
that.
It, so why not use it?
Because the Red Zone does all of the work for you.
Yeah, but if you're a real fan of a team, you do actually want to watch the whole game for the most part. At least I do.
I've not been all that in on watching Steve Sarkisian and then Dirk Cutter call screens on second and long and then run the ball up the middle on third down. Not very exciting stuff for me to watch Falcons football all that recently.
Well, anyway.
And fantasy football.
The gist is, would fans be better served if the team, rather than the NFL, decided how to make live telecasts of its games available to the public? Then they were talking about satellite TV providers, streaming platforms, regional sports networks. Should that be legal? And so they're talking about, there are lawyers involved for the NFL and DirecTV, and they're asking the Supreme Court to review this, and we'll know next week if they will. It could change how out-of-market telecasts are made available to fans, although any final ruling forcing the league's hand is probably a couple years away. So it doesn't affect Fox, NBC, CBS, who, you know, Sunday Night Football, Monday Night Football, and the national game on Sundays or occasionally Saturdays. And it could impact games exclusively on pay satellite cablevision, which would impact the NFL Network and ESPN. And like a sports economist said, if the NFL ended up losing this, it probably won't be dramatic, but fans or consumers would be paying less for out-of-market games. And I've said quite often that the world changed for me in 1994 when Sunday Ticket was made available that season. And for the first time, I didn't have to go down to a sports bar an hour and a half before and hope that on one of the satellites they could get the Jets or Giants in 1991, 92, 93. When you live in New York, ever since 1972 when they lifted the blackout rule, you could literally plan on watching the Jets or Giants every game forever, and you never ever missed one. All right. And just like I said, for selfish reasons, I subscribe to Xfinity, and I've got the bundle with the high-speed internet. We still have a landline, and we also have a pretty substantial package. We also pay for Netflix and Hulu, Amazon Prime, NFL Sunday Ticket. So bottom line is, if anybody ever asked, do you have that? I'm like, yes. Well, if it's on, I've got it. Believe me, I've got the sports package. The only thing I don't get is like what we had to do a couple weeks ago is pay-per-view a fight. I'm sorry. The $57 billion we spring for to have. Plus, you know, I do this. It's kind of legit that I have every idiotic thing possibly known to man. All right. Anyway, this whole cutting the cord is starting to seem really appealing because... So Netflix is like $15 a month. So let's say it's about $175 a year. Plus I got your $800 for Sunday Ticket. Plus Amazon's another $100 a year, but you get the whole Prime and free delivery and all that, which is good around the holidays. And then Hulu is probably $12.90. There's another $150. So right there, I'm at like $1,400 plus the $250 a month I spend on my cable package with my phone and my high-speed internet. Wow. Until I actually thought about it now, yeah, I need to spend a hell of a lot less on this crap.
Well, I just did a quick Google, and you can stream, it was an option for the 2019 season, and for some reason the Sunday Ticket website just says, thanks for watching, see you next year when you try and click on it, which is right. Just super helpful. But there are streaming options and I did some very quick math. It's a lot less than $800 to just stream the Sunday Ticket as opposed to doing that. So that may be something that you want to take up with DirecTV in the future and just say, I would like to walk away, please. I'd like to have $800.
Yeah, something's got to give. No question about it. By the way, I wanted to send a special thanks to our friends at Cornucopia who provided us today with a lovely taste treat. They've got the 5th Street location, the traditional location on 17th, Springfield, and they're running in the running yet again for the Register Guard Reader's Choice Award. Best fries in Eugene, favorite restaurant, favorite overall from last year. Be it breakfast, comfort food, award-winning burgers. Vote for Cornucopia for the Register Guard's Reader Choice Award for best burger, best business lunch, best family restaurant, french fries, mac and cheese, outdoor dining, pub grub, best overall restaurant. And they brought us a variety of good stuff, and it was quite the taste treat, and we appreciate their generosity. All right, break time. Come back, wrap up the 4 o'clock hour next, 95.3 The Score.
Sports Talk with Steve Tannen is brought to you by Garrity RV Supercenters. Name one of America's top five RV dealers. They don't just sell fun, they guarantee it. See over 700 options for every budget at Garrity.com.
Maybe beneath the steel bridge. Here's Lillard outside of three. Got it! Damian Lillard from Oahu to the Wizards. Cut the Blazers. CJ, a little pocket pass right out of the holster there to Whiteside. He's got 20 and 12 tonight.
Little Blazer action. Bust up the Wiz, 125-104. Really good second half performance on the defensive end. Allowed just 43 points. Anybody check the Portland box score? Kind of curious. I know that scoring is substantially up in recent years in the association, but four different Portland players with more than 20. Mellow Yellow, 25. Whiteside with another beast mode performance, 24 points, 16 rebounds, 4 blocks. Lillard returns to the fold with 22, and McCollum matches his double deuce as well. As we welcome you back to Sports Talk, right here on 95.3 The Score. Somebody called and we got a sense it was in relation to Lonzo Ball. So let me get the question correct, Nick. He wanted to know, has there been a player who was a perceived bust as a draft pick?
Correct.
Moved to another team.
A change of scenery was the words that were used, okay. But yes. And then became like a number two or better player with the new franchise.
Yeah, the problem with Lonzo Ball is he got hurt his first 2 years. He played some decent dare I say, ball. He was part of the trade to the Pellies for Anthony Davis, and this is his best year, but it's tough to say because, you know, he was only 20, 21, just not everybody who steps on the court as a young player becomes Zion or Magic. But that's a good one. So I'm going to throw that out there. Anybody could think of a player who's drafted pretty high, wasn't doing great, you know, didn't go Anthony Bennett and all of a sudden was out of the league. But then all of a sudden, after 2 or 3 years, moved to another team and, you know, really started to flourish. All right, 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. Time for one more call. Let's bring in Steven. Steven, good afternoon.
Good evening, Steve Gannon. What is your heart telling you about the Oregon Ducks men's basketball that are playing on ESPN2 tonight against California? Do you think the Ducks can win against California? Because if they can, that'll be a great win for the Oregon Ducks. Because I want to say Gold Ducks forever.
All right. Thanks a lot. Oregon, they're a 17-point favorite tonight. As well as Cal has played, I think they have had one good moment. And it's kind of interesting because we don't know the status of Richardson, who's a really key player. I mean, I would imagine with the minutes he's gone, Pritchard not adverse, especially in such a big game, to playing all 40 and, you know, be joined in the backcourt. And it's so strange because it seems like not that long ago, everybody was worried how thin they were on the front line. With some injuries, and with Dante come back, and then Okoro suffered that family tragedy, and he had to leave. But this is a game. Oregon can't afford to screw around. They've got to win this game and get ready to square off against Stanford on Saturday night, also at 8 o'clock, and make their run at the one seed in the Pac-12 tournament. So I like their chances to win tonight. Really well. Like I said, I always pay homage to the betting line. And as far as how the Bears have done in conference on the road, they won at Washington State. But it looks like, they lost at Stanford. They lost at USC. They lost at UCLA, Colorado, Utah. Yeah, they've struggled on the road. Hang tight. Either way. 5 o'clock hour. Sports Talk is next. 95.3 The Score.
I'm not going to be here.